and gentlemen, honorable members, I would like to welcome the members of the committee, departmental officials, media, members of the public, and other distinguished guests. The purpose of this meeting is mainly to obtain progress reports on implementation of the higher education aid program in both school education and training institutions since its inception. We commend the Department of Higher Education and Training for the launch of this program in collaboration with other stakeholders for the prevent spread of HIV and AIDS epidemic, particularly among young people in our post-school education and training institutions. We hope that the program can also be expanded to community education and training, colleges and centers, so that we can make a meaningful impact to the entire TSET sector. With these few words, I'd like to welcome you once again and looking forward to a meaningful and a constructive engagement. Thank you very much. We will then move on to apologies. I'll ask the secretary of the committee to read the apology.
Thank you, Chair. We received an apology from Honorable Killian. She said she will attend the meeting a little bit later. We also received an apology from the Deputy Minister, who is currently on study leave, as well as the Minister, who is attending the cabinet. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Member Mbata,
that I will not join the second leg of this meeting. My business will end here.
Fine, we'll present you this. I know you miss out on new information on trip, but it's fine. We will share that information with you after the meeting. Alright, we take note of the apology, and shall we then proceed with item number 3, which is introduction.
Ask the department officials to introduce themselves. We already know, but we really want the committee to introduce themselves. You want us to go with the question? No. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Let's hear from the department. Good morning, honorable members. My name is Sandy.
Thank you, Chair. I'm the program director for the AIDS program.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chair. I am from the DHS Social Health. I am Aruna Singh, and I am the director for curriculum development and support in the TVET colleges.
Thank you very much. Well, you forgot to tell us your name.
Apologies, Chair. My name is Dr. Ramnik Aluwalia.
Dr. Ramnik. Thank you very much. Honorable members, we now know who's sitting in this meeting, the committee and the president by official. And then we will then proceed. It's a few new faces basis for us to know exactly who else is in this meeting. Because we normally issue out invitations to the public, general public. So maybe the public has responded. Okay. Over to you.
My name is Izzy. I'm from the ACBC.
Oh,
okay.
My name is Geraldine, and I'm from PNGC.
No, what? I wonder if I'm the only one that's in public. Can you just raise your voice?
My name is Geraldine, and I'm representing PNG.
Okay.
And I'm Marco Schmidt from the German Consulate General on behalf of German Embassy.
Okay. Thank you very much. You are all welcome. Now we will shift straight to item number 4 on briefing by the Higher Education Aid on progress report in the implementation of key aids. Am I pronouncing it correctly? in post school education and training institutions. Over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'd like to thank the Cultural Committee for the opportunity that it has given the department to come and present the implementation of the AIDS program in the postschool education and training sector. In terms of the presentation, this is the overview. We're going to go through the background, the mandate of AIDS, financial support, the programs of AIDS, as well as the achievements of AIDS, as well as its risks within the postschool education and training sector. In terms of the presentation, I'm going to present from the background up until the financial support. And then my colleague, Dr. Amnik, you know, who's the director for AIDS, will sort of like talk about the implementation of the project, because this is something I want to come and do as well. Regarding AIDS, you know, this program is a national program which is aimed to develop and support the HIV, TB, sexual transmitted infection and general health and wellness mitigation initiatives at South African public education institutions and technical and professional education and training for colleges. If I can just bring the committee back to the conception of the program. Initially, the program was established to look at the higher education institutions, that is the universities. It was established back then in 2000. But since its establishment, you know, the department has come on board, you know, to support the program financially as well as some other forms of support. And based on the development within the sector, we have made sure that the program is actually aligned to the National Strategic Plan for HIV, TB, and STI, which is sort of like a government program. So in terms of this program, it is managed by HISA, and it was put under HISA strategically, you know, because of the involvement with the universities, as well as to do with the IDN from the vice chancellors of our universities. But however, in 2013, it was decided that we need to expand this program to cover the TVET sector. And as a result, SACPO, which is South African College Principals Organization, and the OVERSEE, they are the heads of the 50 TVET colleges, have also joined the partnership to support the program. And as I mentioned earlier on, Dr. Karaming is the director for the program, and he'll be speaking later on. In terms of accountability, the program, they report to the department on a monthly basis, and this is the requirement that the MSF, you know, funding has, that they have to report on the funding on a monthly basis. But in terms of then, you know, the technical operational activities of the program as a whole, they also report quarterly as well as annually to the department to ensure that implementation of the program is going accordingly, and that the funds that we provide to the program are used effectively. In terms of the mandate of AIDS, it is to build capacity and human resource capability for a comprehensive and effective institutional HIV response that embodies the health and wellness dimension of the pandemic. Also, to build comprehensive strategies for the TVET and higher education institutions. To develop a more even level of response across the sector on the grounds of a minimum standard, and also to develop effective partnerships that benefit the health mitigation response of individual institutions and the sector. It also advocates and facilitates the sharing of best practices through dedicated events and ongoing platforms. It also promotes relevant research and shares integrated learning and outcomes, and to establish monitoring and evaluation capacities in this sector. And, you know, that's the echo the words of the Honorable Chair, whereby she indicated that she will use this program to cover all of postschool education and training sector. You know, actually, this is the aim of the department, not only to make it to cover just universities and civil colleges, but to ensure that all of postschool education and training institutions do benefit from the program. In terms of the financials, currently what we give to HAIS, which is ring-fence within the water budget of this department, is 7.7 million, that is for 2015. And it will be going up to 8.1 million in 2016 and 8.5 million in 2017. So HAIS also gets some membership support from HISA as they have situated within University of South Africa, formerly called HISA, as well as SALCO has made some commitments towards supporting the program, which currently stands at 2.5 million and could be going up as we move on. But however, I'd like to also point on the NS National Skill Fund. And this is the funding that the program gets through the department via the National Skills Fund. And the program was allocated 24.8 million rand in 2014 to cover 3 years up until 2015. And that program is actually, you know, the funding is actually focused on one of the programs, which is to integrate HIV and AIDS into the curriculum of the universities as well as the business colleges. And then we also get, you know, some financial support from the Global Fund, you know, via some other structures that are still linked to the department. That the Global Fund is under what we call the standard. Then in terms of the implementation of the program, currently HAIS has got 7 programs, you know, that are ongoing. And I think it would be right, you know, to pass over to Dr. Aluadua so that he can give the details of each and every program as well as what is actually happening within the sector.
Thank you, Chair.
And
thank you, members. Honorable members, these 7 programs of the HAIS program are aligned to the National Strategic Plan of South Africa, which was launched by the Honorable President in 2011. Exactly a year later, through the Honorable Minister, we were able to launch a complete strategy that was aligned to the National Strategic Plan, as well as to the Millennium Development Goals, as well as to the National Development Plan. These were the three Bible that we needed to work towards developing a strategy that was launched on 1st of December, that was World AIDS Day, in 2012. From this strategy were aligned with 7 programs in order to comprehensively fight the epidemic of HIV, TB, STIs, but also moving on to the general health and wellness and providing the basic health facilities at the doorsteps of every young student. The 7 programs, if you can see, well, first is the first things first, which I will go in detail and explain how this program works. We cover the men part, that is the men health program, women part through the women health program. On the population, which is key population, the men having sex with men and LGBTI, this is lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, intersexual, there's another program for specific population of youth in our universities and colleges. Specific program, this is microepidemic called drugs and alcohol that's happening, and I will share some depth of how this problem is. So we have a special program on drugs and alcohol prevention program. There's a program on curriculum development integration. So how can, through the support of Department of Labor and International Labor Organization called, how can we produce curriculum in order to ensure the next youth is graduating with the knowledge of health and wellness and specifically HIV? And of course, the campus radio and community radio program, which is a very innovative program towards youth development. And that forms, out of the strategy, the 7 core functions of the HAIS program moving ahead. First things first. First things first means first priority of every young South African to look after their health, not just HIV. And that is what the program is all about. It was started in 2011 from just 23 campuses. And today I'm very proud to declare that till date we have covered all the campuses in South Africa, which is 373 campuses in total, which are campuses that have population of some kind that is always visiting the sites and are taking education from the universities and TVET colleges. First things first, not only just offers HIV testing, but it also offers TB screening, sexually transmitted infection screening, treatment care and support. It also offers blood pressure, sugar, cholesterol, and cardiovascular risk factors. It also goes into cancer screening of 5 major cancers with education. We also go into grounds of circumcision, intradermal implants, because teenage pregnancy remains one of the biggest challenges in the sector. These young girls
And I'm a medical doctor at the end of the day. I'm a kidney specialist, but I can assure you that the womb of this young girl at the age of 18 is not ready to deliver a child. And more importantly, the throughput of our sector gets affected because these young girls become pregnant when they leave the classes. So based on this, intradermal implants and dual contraception remains a very key picture of the first things first. So you can see that bringing HIV under the wellness sphere ensures that the disease is taken as any other chronic disease, and that's what the message goes to every young student. If you're coming for a blood pressure or a diabetic check, the aim is you test early for blood pressure so that you can put on treatment and you can live as long as possible. It's a chronic disease. Similarly for HIV, the aim is test early so that you can put on treatment early and the person can have a very healthy life. And science has even proven that 30 to 40 years of life. So the aim behind the whole first thing first is to test and screen early. And that's behind the first thing first. First thing first program accounts for 96% of the total HIV testing, TB, STI, and general health and wellness interventions in the higher education and training sector. The other 4% is done through the campus health facilities that are available in certain campuses in the university sphere. First thing first program provides 25% first time testers. And that's as per the data collected to the first thing first, and that was 2014 data. 25% first-time successes is a very big success for the AIDS program because it's very difficult to get the new population tested. And that's where our aim is, because if the first-time testers, the first-year students remain the priority, so that as soon as they enter at the age of 15 in a CVET college or at the age of 17 in the university, know their status. So 25% first time testers out of the entire first thing first program remains a very big achievement going forward in this program. And that's our entire aim, is to ensure that the first year and the first population that comes out into the universities and colleges know their status and can be put on care and support. And not only just for HIV, but TB, STIs and other cardiovascular and other risk factors that remain along with us, and microepidemics that are growing along with the HIV epidemic into the country. First thing first program has shown that incorporating HIV in the same way as any other chronic disease within the wellness component service provision helps with removing the stigma attached to the disease. And you can see from the figures in the next slide that in 2011, only 22,000 students were tested. 2012, 66,000. 2013, 41,000. 2014, 97,000. And this year alone, 100,000 students have been tested by June end alone. And you can see the growth of the program. And there are many stages of why the growth of the program has happened. One is, in 2013, the TVET sector was included. And that remains a very vulnerable sector because most of the colleges are mostly in deep rural areas, in informal settlements and in campuses, and taking a very poor population of South Africa. So obviously the epidemic is concentrated towards that population that we need to look after. And of course the growth has been because of that. But the other growth reason has been the wellness sphere, that bringing more wellness opportunities and bringing HIV under the wellness has increased the uptake, and that is what how the students, they feel that it's the disease is not to be stigmatized, and that is one way to kill the stigma of the disease. First thing first is also a very good example because DHET has one of the best examples of working relations with the Department of Health. This program is successful because of the biggest support that we get from the Department of Health, both not only from the national, but each and every provincial Department of Health. We are also thankful to 300 NGOs that have partnered with the AIDS program that provides provision of these support services at the doorstep of these young students. Also thankful to the Department of Social Development, is because of which the alcohol and drugs, which is part of the alcohol and drug prevention program, but the direct service deliveries of provision of care and support is provided as part of the First Things First program. The US government, the German government, and the Global Fund also plays an important role in their contribution of funding and support to this program. And private sector funders, right from the pharmaceuticals, that was through the INFRA, which which we had partnership in 2013, and now with Blue Label as a telecommunication company has started coming and contributing as part of their corporate social responsibility towards the program. So it's a program of different government departments, NGOs, civil societies, development partners, and private sector together in one room. Close to 350,000 students have been tested and screened through First Things First since 2011 as part of this. And not only just HIV, but the figures also include TB, STIs, and other screenings. Our second program is the Men and the Women Health Program. Men and women, separately, these are two different projects, but I have clubbed it together in the same slide because of most of the packages of services are the same in the universities and the TVET. So the difference between the package of services in universities and the difference in the package of services in TVET. Universities have been last 15 years beneficiary of the HAVE program, but TVET colleges are only last 1.5 years, so we can't provide the same services at both the spheres. So, and plus, HAVE follows 26 different modules in the universities. University of Cape Town is very different from CPUT, or UWC is different from CPUT, even if they are a road apart in Western Cape. So you have to follow a different model of operation in UWC as compared to what you follow in CPUT. And that's the best part of the HAVE program, that we run and adapt to the 26 universities along with their kind of population and demographics that they deal with. Similarly for TVET, they work on district by district sphere of how the epidemic goes and what kind of program needs to work in. For the men and the women health program, most important part is the peer education program. The desire is 50 peer educators per campus. We have close to 373 campuses. These are our foot soldiers. And I want to quote an example, Chair, that in Aldutua, a small town in Eastern Cape Province, at a college called King Hansa, when 20 peer educators were capacitated on teenage pregnancies and use of intradermal implants, about 180 girls in the community took intradermal implants. That's from our micro study that we did at IUQI in a small town in Eastern Cape. One of the success stories is because these students from the community in the higher education are educated young South Africans. When these educated young South Africans speak about the issue of teenage pregnancies or intradermal implants into the community, they have a much faster effect than any other NGO or a person like myself going and speaking, or a national person going or an NGO speaking on that one. Because these are people who can speak in Xhosa the way Aldutua speaks, and they can connect with the community much faster, and obviously they have education behind them. So using these peer educators not only influence our own community in the higher education and training university and colleges, but also transform this information in the community, and that is what we are experiencing through our Men and Women Empowerment Program. Women Empowerment Program targets 50 peer educators per campus. Men Empowerment Program targets 50 peer educators per campus in universities and TVET colleges. The aim is that each peer educator then eventually meets 100 people through dialogue, through women dialogues, through men dialogues, through workshops, through conferences, through residences, through clubs, and also to go to the community. And that is how the program goes from one person to the other in reaching out the education part of how this disease affects and what are the other diseases speaking about TB, STI. In Women Empowerment Program, transactional sex, intergenerational sex, issues of sugar daddy, issues of teenage pregnancies, issues of breast and cervical cancers, issues about women empowerment, gender-based violence, sexual violence, all these issues remain a key priority of education when it comes to transforming the information to the universities and college students. Similarly, in men, we have issues on men empowerment and issues around other areas that affect men's lives and men's health. As a doctor, I can assure you that men are the most scared people who will ever go and check their blood pressure or sugar. And that's the reality of the sphere. The aim is, and when I was I'm a nephrologist, most of the dialysis that we used to put is on men, because men is the one who will leave the blood pressure till the last moment. So how do we get men to test HIV? Women, the epidemic is more concentrated in women because women are brave enough to also go and test and know their status. Men will be very scared to go and test their status. So how can we, these young men that we have in universities and colleges, can go and take the test of HIV, TB, and STIs is all what the Men Empowerment Program emphasizes and focuses on. I'll come back to the curriculum program, but the other program that we run is the Men Having Sex with Men, Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, and Intersexual program. This package of services is focused on the risky population, which has been proven to be 5 times more riskier to HIV as compared to any other population. So you can see the model of the hate is men, women, and then also this population, which is very hidden into our fields of universities and colleges, men having sex with the men, or lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, intersexual, which is a key population. It also works on the peer education sphere. The aim and target is to bring peers of men having sex with men, peers of LGBTI to come up front and speak to other peers. This program's success has been that 10,000 from last 2 years, last 1 year, 10,000 young people from MSM population have been able to take HIV tests because of the peer education strengthening program across 16 universities in South Africa. The MSM LGBTI program is also a program that also we just launched our study of 9,000 young people, which is first in Africa, of 9,000 young people across 16 universities coming up front and speaking about human rights and issues about MSM. And the study has clearly indicated how much stigma that remains with this population. Their education levels on HIV is very low because they do not participate in any peer education or any other program because they are too hidden and too stigmatized to speak about. Drugs and alcohol also remain one of the biggest challenges in this sphere. And one of the alarming information that came out was that men having sex with them, men, 60% of them are heterosexual. They're not just homosexual. And I think that was one of the fearful factors because as much as we stigmatize them to be homosexual, they're actually bisexual on the other side. The other program, as we have already emphasized, is the drug and alcohol prevention program. If you go into the sector and the universities and colleges, it's like another epidemic that is brewing inside the universities and colleges. The throughput aspects, as well as the other spheres of drugs and alcohol, kills the students' graduate competency of moving forward. So the program is again works on the peer education sphere. The drugs and alcohol peers, the peers who have abused and have taken the role in the society and young people to come up and are used in order to mobilize more young people to understand the issues of peer education program on drugs and alcohol. The aim is that if we can create 50 students and through those 50 students here in the Pearl campus, which are peers of drugs and alcohol, and they can influence other students to take a test, which is a WHO accredited test. It's an online test, it's a hand paper test where you can know through the screening methodology which level you stand in, from primary care you need, or a secondary abuse, or a tertiary abuse. And if you can find out, immediately a care and support can be provided. For the primary, immediately the counseling can be provided at the doorstep. For secondary, a reference to the social site is important. For the tertiary, a SANCA or the other units which are for the rehabilitation are needed in that round of care. But the aim is very much similar like first things first. Screen for HIV, but immediately then do the test and put the patient on treatment. Similarly for drug and alcohol, the test is very important for the person to know of which level of screening and abuse are they in. So this program works totally on the grounds of peer education, from going from peers to reach the population in order to use the drug and alcohol. The program of curriculum development, this was a demand that the private sector requested the HISA or the University of South Africa currently, that what are we doing as universities in order to address the issues of HIV. It's very difficult to get the teachers out of the schools who have already become teachers and train them on HIV. Can we not train them before they become teachers? Similarly, the other issue was minors and slumbers, issues about TB, silicosis. Can we educate them before they become minors, before they become plumbers, before they go to the workplace? So the aim was, can we develop curriculum on HIV, TB and STI that affects our population and issues of gender-based violence, sexuality, reproductive health, that can be incorporated before a next labor of South Africa comes out of this sector. And through the help of now ILO, which is International Labor Organization, and in partnership with the Department of Labor, this project through National Skills Fund support of the DHET is now helping HAIT to work with every discipline in every university individually. Universities are very autonomous and they have rights on their curriculum but the aim is how we mobilize them towards advocacy and lobbying towards ensuring the curriculum process. The desire is 840 academics by 2016 September should be ready on HIV-AIDS to develop and integrate HIV curriculum both in the university and the TVET sector. And at this moment, I'm proud to announce 210 academics have already been capacitated thus far through all these academic exercises and workshops that have been working through this curriculum project. But the TVET sector, it is working through the department directly because of most of the academic curriculum falls directly under the department's portfolio. The last project, the seventh project, is the Youth Development and HIV Prevention Campus Radio Program. I see our German representative is here. This program is supported through the German government. And this project is about innovative way of reaching the population through community radio channels. You will be surprised that this is not the program for me, us, like person like myself or the minister to make a presentation and be playing advertisements on the campus radio stations. This is about training radio jockeys like DJ Fresh to understand HIV so that he can discuss HIV through musical way, through comic way, in the way he interacts with his population. And this is a very innovative program in order to capacitate radio journalists, in order to capacitate radio jockeys, in order to capacitate our media in order to ensure that they can engage young people the way the young people want. This program not only just focuses on HIV, it focuses on youth development in total, on issues around, on anything that affects the youth, drugs and alcohol, issues around education in total, that how education can immediately transform them and help them developing into skills. At this moment, 14 radio channels from different campuses, right from Tux FM into five provinces is participating into this project. And this project is run through the support of the German government with us. The HIV success in 2014 alone, we can see from the numbers that 96,000 students were tested for HIV, TB 90,000 and STI 76,000. 373 campuses have been, all the 373 campuses have reached. Now we have been able to reach through the HIV program to all the campuses. 12,646 peer educators have been capacitating on issues of men, women, drugs and alcohol, and MSLGBT. The aim is, out of 12,646, the aim was 100, they have to reach to 100 people in minimum. So 1.2 million is the reach of this program at this moment, according to the statistics that we are producing in front of you. Four big researches were launched in 2014-2015. The LGBTI pilot survey, which I have indicated, the first of its kind of 9,000 young people, that was launched on 1st of April this year. It was conducted throughout the 2014 across 15 universities. TVET, first time a knowledge, attitude and behavior TVET college study, because the last study that was done through RAPE was for the universities. And through HSRC, all the 50 public colleges and 180 campuses were surveyed for 6,400 student population on getting us the knowledge, attitude and behavior aspect of the population. And the aim is now that we intensify through the findings of the results. The results were launched by Minister Blake, Honorable Minister Blake, at the South African AIDS Conference during the South African AIDS Conference in June this year in Durban. The evaluation of the AIDS First Things First program was also conducted last year and launched as a publication, of which these results for 25% first-time cases and enormous results for the first things first produced. I'm also pleased to inform the committee that First Things First was awarded as the best campaign of Africa for HIV 2011 and 2013 through the ICASA, that's the African AIDS Conference in Syria. And of course, the radio station evaluation for report, which is through the German government support, is going to be launched this year, was conducted the entire 2014 cycle. HIV integrated online reporting system is a huge achievement for the HIV program.
AIDS was the first program in SANEC as a sector to have launched a complete comprehensive monitoring and evaluation framework launched by the Honorable Deputy Minister in 2013. And based on that, there is a G8 online integrating reporting system. All the 26 universities of South Africa are connected to the National Office of AIDS. Today, as I speak right now, 4 campuses in different colleges and universities are launching or activating First Things First at the same time. And the data that will be collected by them today and tomorrow or whenever, in 1 week's time, is reported to this online reporting system so that we can evaluate how the province is doing, how the district is doing, and how the campus is doing at that moment. For the CVET sector at this moment, because we are new into the sector, approximately all the provinces are linked nationally, and all the CVETs are worked through the province, through the person who reports data from the college and campuses through that sphere, through the online reporting system. And that helps us regulate the disease and other diseases through our programs on grounds of online reporting. Through the Global Fund, which gives direct grants to universities, so we also give direct grants to universities because to strengthen their program, close to 2,695 men and 3,777 women peer educators have been capacitated in addition because of the Global Fund support. This slide can clearly indicate the growth of this program. If you can see in 2013, this program was only in the university sector. And this was the biggest mistake I ever did in my life was in 2011 when I went and reported that I had covered all the 23 universities and I only realized I did only 23 campuses because when I went to Northwest, I only did POSH and I forgot the marketing also. So 23 was just the campus number. That's why if you see in all my presentation, I never used the word number of university or number of TVs. I've always used the number of campuses because that's where young people are and that's where my job is. So 23 campuses in 2011, but then we reached 97 campuses in 2012, 132 campuses in 2013, but in 2014, because it was expanded to the TVET sector, the program was taken place to 278, and now by 2015 June, we can proudly say that the program has reached all the 373 sites that we are aware of in the universities and TVET sector at this moment. This is how the geographic distribution of the campuses look like. Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, Gauteng, Northwest, Mpumalanga, Natal, Free State, Limpopo, and Western Cape. The 373 campuses, CVET universities, that's how the numbers come up and total themselves to 373 campuses. In conclusion, well, I'd rather leave it to Sandile to make the final conclusion, but in reality, I just want to ensure that this program does affect and change lots of lives of these young people. We do get very positive reports from students and from young people who are directly affected through the support of these services that are brought at no cost to them and at direct at their doorstep so that they can use these facilities and can look after themselves. And thank you very much for your attention. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. As for terms of Karamik about the numbers and the statistics that you mentioned here, this goes to show the effect or the impact that the program is having on the young students at our universities and at civil policy. In terms of the intervention as well as the studies or publication, we are very impressed from the department side. And I'd also like to stress again that the program is recognized within the sector, that is within the presidency, within among other departments. For example, what Aramis mentioned that the program on curriculum, we work with the Department of Labor. The program on women's health, we work with the Department of Women. And we also get involved with the Department of Health as well as other departments within government. And just to, going forward, from the department and the collaboration with AIDS, we'd like to see what the impact the program has had in terms of the focus within the university. Because at the end of the day, the value has to be shown in terms of how many dropouts were before the program was introduced, and how many are after the program has been introduced. Well, in terms of how this is a future direction of this program as well, to look at those statistics. And within the department as well, because of the standard the program from the university to the tutor sector. So we'll also be looking as well at getting additional funding, and hopefully through the NSF as well as some other means. And thank you.
Well, thank you very much for the presentation. I'd like to check this self-name, if you've got any addition or the role in this program.
Well, thanks, Chair. I'm covered by all the speakers in the presentation. Thank you.
Well, Honourable Members, you've been listening to a presentation from the Department of Education on program. I will then request members to reflect on the presentation and engage. Honourable Member Kitani. Honourable Member Kitani. Before that, let me welcome Professor Kitani, who has been sponsored to this committee by IST. We are happy to have you here today, and we are looking forward to meaningful and constructive contributions to this committee.
Thank you very much for the welcome.
So I was still saying, Honourable Member Ketana, and then Honourable Member Kassim, and Honourable Member Kuma.
First Chair, two questions. The first one, Doctor, maybe I missed it, but when you're saying you've done so many campuses for universities and TVs, you go to, for example, university, I know there are health centers there. Do you go there and introduce it to the staff, so that the staff can do it with students? Or, I mean, are we able to know how many students ultimately have received the training and the test and so on? So, even at TVET colleges, do they have health centers, or do they allocate the room which will be a health center and you've got somebody working the full time? That's the first question. I just want you to give us just a brief picture of how it is done on the ground, so that you are sure it isn't just campuses without people. Because if you introduce it to a health center, there's no surety that enough students or all students will go there. And we check that students really does get affected. The second point, the health system in South Africa is such that in the township, for example, every clinic have and hospital have community health centers. These are nurses who go around and interact and make sure that health matters in the community are conducted. Do they also give support to, do you work with them and get them to give support so that you're not just doing something, and you could get assistance from the local health services, for example. Thanks.
Thank you. Honourable Member Kassim.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to start off in higher education aid program in your research. How many of these PNDs have a form of a campus clinic? On their campus where students, sort of central point where students can get medical assistance. So that's the first question. And then the second question is, a lot is on awareness and a lot is on testing and so forth and counseling, which is very, very important. In terms of treatment, now it's indicated that many of these students rely on government facilities that may be disadvantaged. My experience, a lot of the universities and campuses that I've been to, they can't access, for example, an antiretroviral at their campus clinic, where there is a campus clinic, where there's TB medication,
types of treatment for STIs, etc. What is in your research that you've done, what is the situation on the ground, and do you not think that perhaps it would be easier to treat if the treatment was made available, because many of the students stay on campus, they don't have transport money to go to a government facility that's sometimes 30 and 40 kilometers away on a regular basis, because you have to fill those orders regularly and so forth. And then around contraception, there was mention of it in my presentation. I decided to expand a bit more in terms of how exactly this would work practically for those that are seeking contraception as it switch to teenage pregnancy or pregnancy among students and so forth that can affect the academic teachers as well. And then lastly, on the testing, and perhaps it also goes into my first question, how exactly does this testing take place? Now, I mean, I've come across, for example, at one of the universities I was at, they have like a week where you go to a certain venue, like a cafeteria, and there's HIV testing that's available and so forth. Now, for the HIV testing, the TB testing, the STI testing, can you go at any time confidentially at a campus clinic, for example? Can it be accessed in that manner? Or is it only in this sort of group type of environment where I'm outside of war and there's these sort of kinky things I set up? I've actually been tested myself, as one of the projects to encourage others, but I've also been thinking, are those facilities available?
In short, you know that
thank you, Honorable Chair. I must commend the presenters and also the universities for the trouble they take in assisting especially our youth in universities against this scourge. A lot has been done if one follows this program closely. Perhaps my concern would be, are we winning the battle? For instance, if we get such big numbers of people that are being tested per annum, what percentage are these numbers of the total student population? Are we succeeding to reach maybe only 1%, 2%, or is it 80%, 90%? And also, if these programs are effective, are we seeing a reduction of university students who test positive? Are we seeing more and more students testing negative? Also, with regard to the radio stations in campuses, which of course is a very expensive project, what about listenership? Do we get many students tuning to these radio programs? Perhaps, of course, it could depend on how entertaining the DJ is or something like that, but my common experience is that the youth usually shun those programs which are educational, which are going to help them, and they focus mainly on what is going to while away their time. So it's mainly about the effectiveness and also whether we are succeeding in winning the war. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
First, apologies for being late. Thank you for your presentation. I did read it, so I didn't miss the whole thing. I just want to talk about And congratulations, by the way, on the program and the good work that you do. How does the funding, what is the funding future of this program? Because it looks to me from your diagram that the funding is dramatically falling from the global fund, which we know is the case in many programs. And the National Skills Fund, which, by the way, I'd like to ask the department how they justify the National Skills Fund giving money, $23 million a year, to basically a health education program, which is not really a skills program. The ATA group will be thrilled at that, but it does raise the question of the role of the National Skills Fund. But anyway, it looks to me as though the funding is about to collapse in the next 3 years or so. What future has the funding of the program got? And then secondly, what about impact analysis? On the one hand, you mentioned that you've measured impact in terms of number of students reached. But what about impact in terms of the rate, the prevalence of HIV? Is it going down among this particular group or not? Because many of these peer education studies, programs, have no way of measuring whether they're actually having an effect or not on behavior. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. My first question would be, I would like to see the organogram of the organization. I just want to see in particular on how do you operate with that very minimal budget and the extent to which you scale up to all the universities. I know there are different methodologies and different ways of duplicating yourself. But I just want to sense exactly how effective is each method of your strategy. Two, have you been able to extract from your many testing sessions across the country where the prevalent, what you call the prevalent rate is going, and what geographic stroke university, socioeconomic zone, for instance, I would imagine with some other programs that are now indicating that there is a growing number of university students in desperate circumstances, in desperate towns that happened also to freelance mistresses of many other elderly men, such as Richard Fay, for instance. What has been the socio-economic impact of poverty and the environment of the university vis-a-vis what kind of direction has it presented and opportunities has it presented to young people? For instance, things that young people, when Professor Mzimang said they intend to while away time, when they are not whiling away time listening to radio, when they engage in the other activities, have you been able to identify the growing rate, or maybe that is manageable also? Lastly, do you have a site in Mamosu to, because for me, if I look at the location of Mamosu as a university of technology in that densely populated economic zone of Mlazi. The reason why I'm asking that is because there is almost such a huge number there, and yeah. Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much, honorable members, for the question. I will now get back to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I must compliment that these are brilliant questions, I must say that. It will not only help me to explain everything because that's exactly the crux of the entire day's program that you've asked as per to the question. There are some overlapping, some few spheres which I will probably cover together, and please, chairperson, in case I missed any question by mistake, please I'll try to re-answer them as per to the question. Sir, you asked a very important question. How does this whole thing work in reality? The whole university campuses and the programs. I must say that how does it work is we got a HEAS institutional coordinating committee in every university, which is chaired by a deputy vice chancellor. A deputy vice chancellor appointed by a vice chancellor appoints a committee called HEAS institutional coordinating committee. When we are activating First Things First program, that is providing all these services at the doorstep of these campuses, prior to that, a lot of advocacy and mobilization starts in that campus. And that is where we bring all our partners, that's the local NGOs and the Department of Health, together in front or in touch with the HICC committee and our manager in the university. So there are two different ways how it works. So TVETs I will explain to you separately, but for the universities I'm explaining the first way, because universities have been 15 years in the existence, so they have structures that can work. Sir, also answering your question, we only have 72 campuses that have campus clinics among the entire sphere. So I think it's a fair important question that I needed to answer you on that ground. Sir. So where we have campus clinic services, obviously a campus clinic cannot look after the entire testing of the entire sector. So that's where the first thing first comes, that all these partners come to test and support the students on those particular days. For that 1 week, when the activation is happening in a college, in a university at that time, along with the campus services, the employee wellness unit, as well as the support of the SRPs, everyone, we try to mobilize in prior, all these services are brought at the doorstep. We ensure that every partner that comes, when they are testing students, they have to immediately refer them in case they have become positive or in case there is a problem, immediately to be referred to the nearest site, and that's where we have a partnership with the Department of Health. So also answering your question that the community healthcare nurses, they are our front leaders from the Department of Health who are providing services at our universities and colleges. So it all works in a very innovative way that HEAS and that's also such as the organogram of how it works. We've got one provincial coordinator in one province. So for example, when that provincial coordinator in Western Cape is there, and there are about 40 or 36 TVET campuses and about 8 or 10 university campuses, each campus and university gives dates when they will be comfortable to activate First Things First and all the testing at the campus. And that is important because we do not want to impose them and say, today we will come and you be ready. We ask the universities when they are comfortable, when their particular campus is comfortable looking at the academic and the other sphere on that ground. And they give us dates. So 373 campuses across the country give us dates prior and they give us approximately 2 months time period before an activation can take place. Activation takes place for minimum 2 to 5 working days at a particular campus because we partner come with all the resources there. We coordinate these meetings prior with the university and the campus site in order to open the doors for these partners to come. Data which is collected through the support of every person that is tested and referred to the Department of Health or a nearest site of the U.S. government is immediately given and provided to the campus manager of a TVET college and a campus manager in the university campus. And that remains the data, and that comes to the HEAS coordinator that tabulates the data and provides it nationally and how we collect the data. Prior in every meeting, a proper referral, treatment, care and support is discussed for every patient because we do not allow any student to be tested till that mechanism is in place. So no partner is allowed to enter till they have a proper mechanism of referral that has been attached along with it. I want you to slightly explain to you how it actually works. The peer education program and the advocacy and lobbying happens prior to the activation of the person's right, because that's how we mobilize young people in order to take the test, because they will never take the test if they don't know what to take the test. Similarly, condoms, colored and scented condoms, which the Department of Health has offered to the universities and colleges, are provided prior to their coming and during their activation days in order to ensure the data. The vision is that we do these activations at least twice a year for 5 days. 5 days cover every campus in the first part of the year and the first part, so that every student gets the equal opportunity to test in twice a year. And as the chairperson rightly said, the testing needs to be done frequently and at least at a gap of every 6 months, and even more often if it is provided. But this mechanism is not just to provide HIV tests, it's also to provide basic health services at the doorstep at this college and university level. Also answering, sir, your question regarding the treatment parts of the ARVs part, which you have rightly said, the aim is that we accredit at least those campus clinics that we have to the accredited ARV sites. At this moment, we have 6 campus clinics that are ARV accredited sites. So at least, like for example, in Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University, we have an accredited site, so the students can take their ARVs there. It really helps on the grounds of the point, because if a student can take the ARV at the doorstep itself, they cannot leave their classes, their academic studies, and they do not have to stand and have to go to the Department of Health to collect. So it does really help. But our care and referral and proper referral system is quite in place towards ensuring that every student who is being tested positive, though as much as it is the student's choice whether he wants to reveal it to the campus, but the tester who is doing the test ensures that the person is going to have his next CD4 count and other CS followed up from the nearest site. So on that ground, it is being looked after on that sphere. Similarly, it goes for DOTS, which is a TB treatment, as well as it goes for the other diseases that we spoke about immediately on that ground. So on contraception, you asked me to expand about it. For the contraception, both female condoms, lubricants, intradermal implants, as well as the male condoms, all the dual contraception is being offered as part of it. As you asked me the question about contraception, the dual contraception is being looked after, right from a male condom, female condom. This year, 23 million condoms have been already been distributed at this moment as I speak, till the June data that I have. We are using these educated South Africans to capacitate other people, is because we have seen through a little bit of our studies, as you asked, sir, that it does make a difference into the community when an educated South African speaks about, or a young student speaks about in that language to the people, and that's what I was trying to emphasize, that contraception really makes a difference in teenage pregnancies when a word of mouth spreads and more people know that at no cost to them, and they don't have to go to a GP to spend this money, at no cost to them it can be provided at the doorstep of a campus. And sometimes we also see some nearby high school students and other relatives also coming, and we don't stop them, because at the end it's supplies that goes to the community at the end through the system, but of course on that ground. The testing week, you're totally right, sir, as you rightly said in your, that it goes for a week. It goes for 5 days, and it is in a, and sometimes dedicated playground area or a site is given by the university where all the gazebos are put by different partners of their own, the U.S. government partners, the Department of Health, and other NGOs, as well as our own campus clinics and aid sites that put their campus for the soldiers. Because we need to get more and more, because one tester can only test 8 or 10 students in a day on an average. So, but we need, and this population is too big, so we need many more staff to come and test. So that's an innovative way of bringing different partners on the same day so that more testing can happen. And that's exactly where it happens. Similarly goes with circumstances. So your question about are we winning the battles, and Prof, you asked a very important question. First thing first, data is a routine testing data like any Department of Health does testing and routine testing. It's not a study or is a seroprevalence study that I can indicate to you a prevalence data. A seroprevalence study was only done for the university sector, and that was the funding that we got from the European Union in 2008 and 2009, and that study had given us some evidence on ground of how much prevalence remains in the university sphere. But for the TVIP, as we have already indicated, that the program only expanded in 2014, and it's only 1.5 years, yet we only have done a knowledge, attitude, and behavior, but we haven't done a prevalence. But on the other side, we do rely on the national studies that are done through the HSRC, through the other data, which is very much aligned to a young population data that sits in our universities and colleges. Through the routine testing of 100,000 students, we do have seen a trend of decline in the last 5 years of the testing numbers, of the results that are coming positive out of them. But we cannot generalize it as a study, as it's not a serial study on that ground. If 100,000 students are out of the 1.6 million students at school, so we can already see 16% of the coverage, as you've asked how much is the coverage of testing, 16% at this moment, which for a program like this is quite an achievement, because it's a great work that goes around it. So you asked about the question on listenership. You're totally right, it's one of the most difficult and challenging, but I can assure you, sir, it's not expensive. The funding from German government is only $500,000 a year. And you can imagine from just $500,000, what we can remiss do is, we can capacitate is these radio journalists. And they give us 30 minutes airtime 3 times a week. So that because of this 30 minutes, at least 30 minutes of airtime is being run on HIV and issues of this. And we can, and we are hoping that because it's so innovative, listeners are doing. One of the targets the German government has given is the reach. And I can tell you at this moment, we have calculated through our baseline study the results that are going to be launched at the ICASA conference in Africa in Zimbabwe this year. It has clearly showed 42% listeners are listening to these programs, as per to our basic baseline research study that has come. So, but these are just the study's results. But what has happened is, one big result that came out was from Scotch campus, that Afrikaans students, which we never ever hoped for them to test, because this was very much a program which we were missing out the our African population that can test in Scotch campus. Actually, we got some big numbers coming from the Scotch campus. For us, that was a very big achievement, and that when the survey was done, it was related to the campus radio program that was run at the Scotch campus, and because of that, they were alarmed to get. So there was certain kind of small evidence that has clearly indicated that this program is slightly working on this year of listenership. So regarding the organogram, as you rightly pointed out, I do have a very small team for this ground. We have myself as a program director, and I have got two senior managers. One is looking at the university branch, and one is looking at the TVET branch. Under the TVET branch, we have got 8 provincial managers, which are stationed in each province. Because for the TVET, at this moment, we do not have a structure, a full dedicated staff employed by a TVET that's working on the issues of health and wellness and HIV. And we work with the campus managers and student service managers, as well as the academic managers, in running all these programs. On the other side, our senior manager of the university branch has a coordinator in the office that works in all the 24 managers in 24 universities across South Africa, which have a full-time employment on HIV, which is like an HIV coordinator or a campus health HOD. That helps us moving all these programs with them. Under their services, they have peer trainers, peer mentors. So there is quite a structural program that is happening in the university. And that responds directly with our senior manager at the office for the university. But for the TVET, everything is done from the national office with the help of the provincial managers, in support from the student service managers and campus managers of each and every university. So that's how the organogram operates into the program set. So you're totally right about the issue about the provincial and the university kind of a look towards how the prevalence moves around and how the epidemic. That's why, sir, I indicated that the AIDS has to run 26 different programs in 26 universities, and similarly every district has to be taken separately, because the need as you rightly said, in Umlazi, in Mangasutu, and the district like Richardspay is totally a different kind of a work sphere and the population. For example, Khasa population has a different way of how we work with the Transkei sphere than the Richardspay area, the old one. And similarly, when you go towards Zululand area, we divide them of how the communities work. So you use community leaders there, community peers who can try to mobilize much more. So it's very innovative on grounds of how we try to work in every district and every constituency separately on grounds of using the strength to the best effectiveness on that ground. Ma'am, you're totally right about the funding feature part of it, but I want to tell you that the National Skills Fund of 23.8 is on a specific area of curriculum only, on the curriculum development. It has nothing to do with the AIDS program, and that's over for a period of 3 years. It accounts to close to 9 million a year, but it is only for a specialized project of only skills of curriculum integration on HIV/TB. National Skills Fund at this moment is not being used at all for any of the testing and the other spheres of peer education at this moment. Ma'am, you're totally right. If you ask me what gives me sleepless nights is the funding gap because of the global funds and their reprioritization and their decrease to South Africa. In total, as every sector is getting affected, we are in the same boat of this, and it definitely puts a bit of a concern. Similarly, the U.S. government support of the U.S. aid, as we all know, is also on the verge of a slowdown in the field. So it does affect, as the nationally, every sector is being affected, and AIDS is being also affected tremendously. Specifically, it's a very innovative program of using all the best to bring it at the doorstep of these sectors. So it's, and I'm sure as a department, we're working on grounds of how we will be able to resource this to it. For better impact. I think, Chair, I've tried to answer. Probably if I miss something, I'm going to re-answer.
Thank you for your report. I'd like to check if there are follow-up questions. Honorable Member Kassim, Honorable Member Kodori.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to thank the directors for answering such a very good answer. I want to just do a follow-up on treatments. The director spoke about HIV treatments, but to extend to TB and STI treatment, does this exist? So as I understand it, there are 6 of the 72 accredited as ARV centers. Now of this 72, how many would be able to provide treatment for TB and STI, and why have the other 66 not been accredited for ARV type as well?
Thank you for your question.
Thank you. The funding situation is extremely worrying. We're just sitting here saying what a wonderful program it is, but in 2 years it may well collapse and no longer exist. Surely this is a key issue that we need sense from the department of what they're doing about. If we all support the program and think it's a good idea, we need some response from the department about future funding possibilities.
Thank you, Chair. No, that's a point on the issue of funding. Regarding the funding, as Amik mentioned, for example, the Global Fund, what we show here is the funding that is ending in 2015, and there's another large amount that is coming, I think, from 2015, which is approximately around 20 million. But however, we do recognize that that the program will be sustained going forward. I hope that answers.
So regarding the treatment part of the cancer clinic, when the ARV accreditation happens from the Department of Health, because it's only the DOH that can accredit a site for ARVs, and that accreditation, other diseases are definitely taken care of, because ARV remains as a pyramid at the top. So if you have a pyramid top sorted out, then the lower part is already covered. So the TB and STI automatically gets covered if the ARV accreditation happens to a particular site, because the site is actually a broader site of community health. For the other, for the sick sites, the desire is if we can make as many sites possible for ARV accreditation, and we are really in touch with the Department of Health towards lowering the accreditation criteria. Like, for example, one of the accreditation criteria is PMTCT, or mother-to-child transmission, or children, whereas our sites are not equipped to deal with children because we do not have children in the sector. So such kind of small modalities also affect at times, which we are working in trying to lower the accreditation criteria so that more and more sites can be accredited. But it also depends at times with the universities, because universities are a bit autonomous and they make their own decisions regarding whether they want to go towards that parameter or not. But if you ask me in personal capacity, it will be a huge desire to get as many as possible, because it has really makes a huge difference. Thank you.
Looks like we've come to the end. We will close the Thank you very much.
I just want to check, what is the methodology used to entice universities more recently to independently create their own budget to scale up whatever they need that grows in these institutions? And then the last one is, Global Fund is not going to be your friend anytime soon. And you know the reasons are exactly ahead. They have a big problem with many approaches of our own government. And those approaches will make them to look at other countries as a priority than ourselves. And also, competitively in the Southern Hemisphere, they are now sharing the budget with what is no longer AIDS only now, AIDS and malaria. So that split is affecting South Africa tremendously, because there are parts of South Africa which spread between Swaziland and Mozambique, and they are becoming more of a priority. So that kind of budget actually has to be attended to within the budget of Southern Africa. So for me, I think the department will have to find a way in which it entices growing and increase the budget out of its own resources, because young people entering the university system, in particular the TVET college system, is increasing, and the provision will need to increase, and also the efficiencies in the provision, for instance the heightening of all the services, will have to be at that par with the universities, even though the TVET started a little bit later. So your own resources in this instance will be your best measure, rather than looking at the international funding.
Thank you, Honorable Mbata. That's on the issue of funding, as indicated earlier on. The department is working on trying to make sure that the program is sustained and possibly expand as it is actually happening. So, I cannot give specific right now in terms of where the funding is, where we're going to be getting the funding. But we're currently working on a process to make sure that the funding is available for the program.
Well, thank you.
you, Honorable Chair. As I mentioned earlier on, I think the department is humbled and privileged not to be invited by the portfolio committee to actually talk about the implementation of the aid program as was mentioned. And this is on the recognition that, you know, the lives of, you know, the students within, you know, the sector are affected by this, you know, pandemic, which is HIV/AIDS. And as a result, it's a responsibility for the department to ensure that this doesn't happen, they are not affected by the pandemic. If we can help and guide, you know, so that, you know, they're able to seek care if they are suspected of positive, or to prevent any future infection that is possibly HIV and the STI. So in closing, we just to thank the portfolio committee for their kind words, for their support, and as well as their questions and all the comments from the honorable members of the station. And we will note it and move the message to the department to ensure that AIDS program continues to do their work. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me thank the department for coming to brief us on the AIDS program and the progress made in actual implementation. It is good. I would like to hasten to congratulate you for the Best Development Award in Africa. And this, we can attest from we agree with this award as it is illustrated by your work that has covered the facilities and communities campuses. And I want to give that this is certainly honored. Very wonderful. Honored.
That's something that is important to hear.
And the implementation of the STF to over 100,000 in the current year and greater than 330,000 in the future. We can only say and it is true for this program to continue or maintain this award status, we will need money. Well, observations made by most of the members who spoke on the budget are correct, that the budget is, the budget reduction in the MTEF period, in your need analysis, you have identified the need to find more funds for this program. So this committee would like you to submit your fundraising. It's not good enough to say you want to find it, you want to action. So that indeed this program is good, supported, well supported, and will continue. We would like to thank the German government and other donors for the financial support. It does make a difference. In terms of government TPP policy, public-private partnership policy, we must commend you for firstly aligning with the Department of Health national strategy and for working in partnership with other key stakeholders. We can only say that this is how we can make money for the community. But also, this is one area where you go to go in as far as your fundraising needs. Because just for the program, okay, this time is another thing. Funding. We support business, but also to request the program.
We're fighting for a future, sir.
How do you do this? Honorable members, we have minutes of the 22nd of August. Shall I request that we disable for me? And of course, you can be in a position to join this other committee on the exchange. Now, we have a particular agenda for Sunday. So, as I was asking, I think we're going to join. We must not surprise you. And then, on announcement, may I make a request? Yesterday we met with one of the troubled universities of the time, but there are two others where it seems to be there are also very serious problems. One is PUC, which we've already been to and seen huge problems there, and now we've had violence on campus. And the other one is Fort Hare, which we understand is about to be declared bankrupt. And a forensic report has been issued, which is very, very serious and damaging. I'm wondering if we can't find time for those two universities. Well, thank you so much for your input. You are right. You don't have to wait until the trouble before we intervene. This has been our approach. You see a program that in your program you will then prioritize certain activities. The deal then let's look as we encroach into the future where we can speak in this. They are recording and all this is my management. I always say, let's look at all these other issues that we just submitted and first of all, taking your input correctly and then prioritize them according to the need. That's the need in this one. So definitely this one, then we're taking note of the input that we're making on other issues that should be added on our program of action.
I agree with you that the bill will preoccupy us for the better half of the end of the year. My suggestion would be to attend to what the court is suggesting. I know it's going to be very tight for members, in particular those who are always busy on Monday. I will suggest that if there is very urgent attention that we need to pay to a specific university, I would suggest that maybe we can look at recommending to powers that be in Parliament and utilize a mandate to go and be there and then come back so that it doesn't actually interfere much with the schedule of the House beginning from Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday.
Well, I know that as politicians we are interested in political work on
Monday.
So that we not completely removed from our constituency.
But
now maybe a proposal could be we do it like we did yesterday.
Yes, yes, sir.
We use the Tuesday morning.
But I've got economic development on Tuesday. That's why I'm suggesting Monday.
No, no, no.
know, it took us from 9 to 4 to 2, and we came up running. So we must be practical. Anything that we are doing, we must be implemented. Let's have one. Okay. We will see how we move forward. So let's take one. So we will take a which one? So we'll take the pocket.
Yes.
Now I'm trying to think, okay, when I said that we need the body is in there. No, you're in there. Yes. Let's keep it going to be even more cost effective. So we then have pot here and then the next week we will then look at whether it can be in there. So we should take another one.
Mm.
But there are other issues, remember, that we raised earlier. Remember there are other issues that we raised earlier. We have to also look at those issues. They were raised in one meeting.
Mm.
As issues that need our needed attention. So this one will be prioritized, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then we will then as management look at the other issues that we submitted. And then we will also prioritize after them. And then maybe we will then announce, okay, in the next meeting on which of these we, you know, this is how we are going to take attention. I really appreciate your availability. To work hard, but also your preparedness for these meetings. That's why we must also get a report by our officials on the impact that we are making. Who put enough for us to work and not make any impact? So on the impact, maybe we should have that report in this week. Next week, on Wednesday, we will be receiving a briefing on the migration of nesting and agricultural quality. So, alright, the officials will then, let's allow the officials to present this impact analysis report as a structure and session. How is that? No, better. Any other input, honorable member? Honorable member, Sotana? Okay, yeah. Okay,
I think what will also help us when people come, we can also advise that look, your presentation is within 1.5 hours. Or, I mean, to be honest, from Stellenbosch, some of the things could be cut out. I mean, that's outgoing prejudice. I don't think we had as much room.
But
so if you can allow us to allow everybody to make, we should limit the attack. That way we can have two presentations and prepare the
formula. I just want something to add. Just to be brought to the message. There was also an issue. What is the issue there? So that we are all
excited.
No, I will mention the message to you, but there was we saw it even on TV. There are these BSM students who wanted to attend a particular meeting where there was Senate and Council and Management, but I'm not sure of the issue. We can investigate, I think, and then can assist with that one so that we get more information. But I'm also concerned that maybe the approach
do we investigate whether the institution itself has intervened in the cases that we are dealing with? Because I don't want us to, this will, you know, poke all students in entire education institutions to do something so that their university can be called to be called Parliament. I don't know whether are we not setting an incorrect trend. I don't, but I want us to also look at that. Is it making sense? I don't know. We need to also look at that, because we don't have to just jump and call management for what do we expect. For instance, yesterday, it was true that we should have called the college that is actually concerned, because now we're getting from the university, now that they are here, I think we need to investigate first so that we see whether it is valuable that we call that particular institution. Now they are saying, no, that college is not part, but they do accredit, but I don't know what, but there's something they do with a particular module, or which that doesn't mean that college, Elsenberg College, is part of Stellenbosch. But yeah, I think things like that, we need to first get information and then arrange for a meeting. Yeah, get more information. Thank you.
On the issue. No, we have not just called people. Yesterday's meeting was really necessary. And when we call them, we're not creating precedent. You don't understand this here. We called them because we saw a national crisis which was of national interest and warranted our immediate intervention. So where does crisis see your intervention will be a crisis intervention? Not just an ordinary intervention. So thank you very much for the role you played, your contribution to open the issue. And everybody will agree with me that it was a great success, and now at least the world knows what is happening there and the commitment by the rector on the corrective measure. And if you not commit to us only, the whole world was watching it. So and they reported to our corrective to the world. So thank you very much for that, and then
Chair, I'm a little bit concerned about the strategic planning session, 15th and 16th September. Maybe it's just more of a personal concern, because I know that I'm involved in an election, that I've already gotten leave from my chief book on the 14th, 15th and 16th of September. And ordinarily it would be fine, but just that this is a strategic planning session that's going to dictate our agenda. I wouldn't want to be excluded from that, Chairperson. If we can make an alternative arrangement, if that is possible, it would be appreciated.
Well, it's not
this
say I'm okay and appreciating serving here, but because of our numbers as the ISP, I'm only an alternate. So if you miss me, it's not because I do not have interest, it's because I'm engaged somewhere else. I'm sorry about that. Thank you very much.
Okay. You were with which team? Oh, you were there. Okay.
And you, what are you?
I was at UNIFRA.
Oh.